Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
It's a hard yes.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live over at Crowdcast, also live over at YouTube, the Tube, or we're coming to you later on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your fine podcasts. It's all good with us, brah. But
only the finest of podcasts for me, please.
Top shelf for you. Speaking of which, why don't we start off with tonight's drink? Now, as frequent listeners slash watchers of the show know, Brett Macris, a.k.a. Stray Bullies, a.k.a. Stray Bullet, a.k.a. PP. Is that right, Pete? Am I getting it right?
No,
I don't know. Is that a different podcast?
Yeah, it's a different.
You like to shout stuff when I'm talking, so I'm starting to lose track a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh no, we insulted Stray Bullet. This is a joke for a Riverdale podcast, but it confused everybody. Anyway, he has been curating a drink for us every week. This week we've gone back to the Gotham City cocktail book. And woo-hoo! This week we're doing a Lazarus, a drink that will bring you back to life, whether you're Ra's al Ghul or raising children on your own right now.
Oh, yeah.
Like Justin.
Wow.
Like I, that's good. I like it. Yes. My Lazarus pit is just laying down in my gin bath.
It's very good, by the way. The fancy part is you take a absinthe wash on your glass. But other than that, it is gin, Cointreau, dry vermouth. And I ended up, I didn't have any lemons around, so I used lime juice. Just as good. It's supposed to be lemon juice, though, but still very tasty. Nice.
Wow, really shaking it up.
Well, speaking of shaking things up, Alex, who the fuck are you? And, you know, you're just going to change glasses and act like nothing happened? What the fuck, man?
Pete's been very thrown. We've talked about this already this week because I got entirely different black frames.
You didn't talk to us about it. You didn't give us a heads up.
Yes. So just to give you, in case you're listening to the podcast, and this is very apropos of comic books, which we talk about, and fashion. We usually have a fashion section on the show.
Yes.
Previously, I had black frame glasses that were rectangular in shape. They were a little angled on the side. And now I've switched over to something entirely different, which is black frame glasses, a little bit rectangular in the shape with angled on the side. And it's really throwing Pete.
Yeah, I don't know who you are or where the real Alex is, but I want him back.
The frames
Pete,
are slightly
I support
thicker.
You in everything and agree with all of your opinions.
Uh-oh, this is a different guy.
Oh, boy.
This is some sort of Clark Kent situation
exactly.
We've got here.
Who
I
is
I can't
guy?
Tell this guy apart. Now, so I guess for you undersighted folks, when changing glasses is like a big deal. Right?
Yeah.
Sorry, I have perfect vision.
I know, you point it out to us every 5 seconds.
I don't think this is as big deal style-wise as Pete is saying. However, these glasses are actually tight to my head.
Do your kids recognize you?
No, I haven't seen them in weeks, to be honest with you.
Say, man.
Hey, library
it started to hurt my head a little bit.
So
I don't know. Maybe I got to go to the eye doctor or something like that.
Your brain is popping out of your ears. I meant to tell you that from being squeezed by the epic pressure of those Warby Parker frames.
Sweet specs.
The sweet specs. Exactly. All right. Why don't we move on? Talk about something else here. We have been asking you all for comments over on Apple Podcasts. Leave a rating, leave a comment, request a book for us to review in our Stack podcast. We got a new comment here I wanted to read. This is from Sky Juggler, who says, "A well-oiled machine of a podcast. Go back and invest in listening to the years Alex, Justin, and Pete have put into making Hysterical an informative podcast. You'll learn new words and phrases that you'd never think you want to know."
That's true.
Yep. "I'd love to hear what the CBC guys think of Asterius Polyp and or any of the Karl Barks, Don Rosa Duck comics. Love all of those because we couldn't do everything this week. We are going to talk about Asterius Polyp by David Mazzucchelli. That's going to be on our Stack podcast, which posts in its own feed and the Comic Book Club feed Wednesdays at 9 a.m. So we're going to actually do that this week. Very excited to revisit that. One of the best, not to spoil it, but one of the best graphic novels of all time. So,
oh, wow. Wow.
I mean, it is widely recognized as one of the best graphic novels.
Really spoiling our potential.
Not even, maybe I hate it. Who knows what I think? I'm just saying, generally speaking, in the world,
we're going to have some words.
No, you don't like it because there's nudity, Pete.
I want to shout out that comment especially because for a long time we were just an oiled machine. And then we started to be well oiled. And that changed the entire
thing. Really is.
We were too oiled. We were oiled.
Yeah, we were slip sliding all over the place in that first year or so.
Yeah, but we started as a Speedo oiled up wrestling show and then eventually got into comic books.
That's not true at all.
If you'd like us to get into a choice of comic book, again, go to Apple Podcasts, leave a rating, five stars preferable, as well as a comment, and we will review something of your request on an upcoming Stack podcast. But we're going to bring in our first guest here.
All right.
He is the creator of Uncovered Grave, a new comic, and it is very spooky. I'm very scared to talk about it. Ladies and gentlemen, Sean Dicker, hello.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me on.
Oh my gosh, thanks for coming on. Excited to talk about Uncovered Grave. So you've been trying to push out the promo for this book. It's very spooky. It's very scary, like I said. Tell us a little bit about the concept of the book.
So Uncovered Grave, it's about a murder mystery set in a small town back in the 1950s. It's a cold case. So the murder actually took place in 1930. And it's about this Detective David Herring, trying to figure out what happened to a classmate of his, Lily Hill. And it ties into friendship and legacy and regret. It's a really personal story for me.
Oh, wow. I just wanted to say real quick, like, we read a lot of like horror kind of scary stuff. And I really appreciate it as someone who's not a huge fan of horror in all the heart and the stuff that you can kind of connect to. So even if you're like scared of these type of books, there's really a lot to offer here. And I really appreciated the not just the horror, but the story is really impressive.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I kind of wanted to make it almost like a psychological thriller almost. A lot of people, when they look at my artwork, they're like, oh, yeah, like you should just be drawing horror for your entire career. Like, don't worry about that. So I really wanted to see it directly into my noir roots and make it visually dynamic and spooky.
Now, when you approach just like a panel, let's say, how do you add that extra sort of tension and horror to like a panel on a panel by panel basis? Because I feel like you do such a good job in this book doing that.
Thank you. That means a lot. For starters, you can do a lot with camera height and how you frame a shot. Psychologically speaking, when you are looking up at somebody, you, the viewer, are going to think of them as like larger than life. You're like subconsciously thinking you're below them. So in certain instances, like you want to make the viewer seem like this person's really scary. They're larger than life. Other times you want to put it on eye level so the reader can connect with them more visually. And then other times you want to be above them. So you're looking down on them. They're really small. Kind of like the world is like closing in on them almost. And that's kind of how I try to add tension.
I'm so glad you said that, because that was, I feel that. And looking through it now in the panels that Alex is showing here, I feel like you also vary the angle a lot. So it's unsettling, even though, you know, a lot of this is people talking, but it's still like, you're like, there's a tension throughout. And I think it's really, really subtle what you do. It's great.
Yeah. I appreciate that a lot. I know, like, the majority of the book is like people sitting in a room trying to figure out something that happened a long time ago. So I wanted to make it visually appealing for everybody who's reading the book. I wanted to make sure that it's fun to read, as long as everybody's still solving the mystery, you know?
Now, you, correct me if I'm wrong here, but you don't have this as a Kickstarter or an Indiegogo or anything like that. You're just trying to build buzz for the book. Why go this route in terms of promotion versus the crowdfunding route?
I was approached by Dauntless and Marcus over there, and they asked me to do this book as their first serial book. So nice. Every 2 weeks, a new chapter comes out. So six pages mm-hmm. comes out. And I really liked the concept. I wanted to be able to get the book right into fans' hands when it's done, as I'm doing it. And I try to give everybody some bonus content, whether it's like a look behind the scenes, some character designs, like how I design my covers and my thought process behind that part of the creation process, or like a step-by-step breakdown of how I make the visual storytelling in a page work. Kind of like how I was just talking about with the varying camera angles to add like a psychological effect. So that's kind of what drove me into wanting to partner with Dauntless for this. I wanted to do something big and bold and experimental. This is my first comic ever solo. So yeah. I really wanted to take a risk and do something really cool and something that intrigued me. And I mean, I get to appear on all these cool podcasts and hang out with all people. So I think that's just part of the fun of it all.
We actually hear that a lot of comic book creators don't even like making the comic books. They just do it for the podcasts.
Yeah.
Do it
for podcast bait. Podcast bait.
I just make comic books so I can talk to people and fill my ego.
I do podcasts kind of the same reason. So there you go.
Wow.
So given this is the pace that you're releasing it at, how far ahead do you need to be working in terms of the release schedule?
So little known fact, I'm actually doing it live. As the chapters are coming out, I am doing the project on the biweekly system. I do it biweekly so I can still take on some paid work, pay the bills and whatnot, and make sure that everybody gets this awesome book. I'm really proud of Uncovered Grave, but I want to make sure that I give myself enough time to make each page as extraordinary as the readers deserve.
And
wow, go ahead. Ramp up the pressure? Do you feel like it, sort of working so close to?
Oh yeah,
yeah. Because you seem pretty chill about it, if I could just say.
Oh no, I'm not chill about it. I'm doing the writing, the drawing, and the coloring, inking, all of it. I've written everything beforehand, so luckily I'm not writing everything.
Good, thank you, smart. Yeah.
So I'm just drawing it bi-weekly, but it's definitely stressful, but the way my brain works, like the stress helps fuel me, and I can feel myself leveling up with each chapter and feeling myself get more comfortable and loving what I'm doing each more with each page. So as hard as it can be, it's also even more fun because of that.
That's great.
Like a method drawing process where you're like, well, I want this to be tense, so I'm going to be tense for a while.
Yeah, there have definitely been nights where, well, days really, I've definitely pulled like a 60-hour day.
Oh, man. You know,
that's more than 2 days.
Oh, yeah. Deadline got close and I was like, okay, I got to get this done. And I want to make sure like I'm not cutting corners and making sure it still looks good.
Yeah. Was that real quick? Was that the chapter where the characters went into a dark cave where there was no light and you couldn't see them?
Yeah. It was
definitely- Oh, okay. Great. Okay.
Just a heads up for you. If you're awake for more than 3 days, you're legally insane.
Oh, that's fun.
Well, just, you know, for future deadlines, you know what I mean? Like, take care of yourself, please, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That I was doing it weekly. It started affecting, like, my personal life, so that's why I moved over to the bi-weekly system.
Yeah.
And it's gone so much better now that I'm doing it bi-weekly. And it gives me more time to make sure that all of the pages are exactly the way I want them. And because it's my first book and I'm asking readers to take a big leap with me on this experimental process. Again, it's my first book. I don't have like a lot of like cred or like anything like a track record to really have readers go off of. So I want to make sure that I'm giving them a quality product and that there's something that they're proud that they put their money towards this.
Wow, that's awesome.
That's awesome. Do you have, is there a end in sight, or is this, no man, this is the rest of my life. Every 2 weeks I'm going to be putting out several pages of this book.
So it's going to be 4 issues in total, 16 mm-hmm. chapters. And issue 2 just wrapped up. So we're halfway through the book.
All right.
And when I first started writing this book, I started with the ending. So now we're getting to all of the stuff that I really wanted to draw and I was really excited to write about. And that's why I'm even more jazzed and more excited to get to this last half of the book, because this is where all the twists get revealed and like yes. all the clues that I've been hiding in the book like start paying off. And the big twist at the very end, I'm not going to spoil anything, but
yeah, please.
I started with that ending twist and I kind of like worked my way towards the beginning of the story.
Cool. We got a little bit of a challenge here on the YouTube comments. Ramsey Hassan says manga creators produce 20 pages a week of quality manga.
All right. Let's take it easy. Come on.
He's already pushing himself to the edge.
My two thoughts are, one, pick up the pace, buddy. The other thought is quality manga? I mean, that's debatable.
What? Come on, dude.
I'm just saying, not everybody is pumping out 20 awesome pages every single week.
I have a lot of respect for all of the manga artists, but if you look at their health records, a lot of them are not doing well health-wise. Yes.
Oh, no.
So I wish I could just shake all of my favorite manga artists and be like, take care of yourself. Yeah. Wait another week for another chapter of One Piece.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Just take care of yourself.
We'll be right. And where can people check out this book if they want to take a look at it?
We should take a look at it.
So you can pre-order the physical copy on Dauntless's website. You can also find just the digital tier if you want that. Each or every 2 weeks, directly to your email, another chapter will come out. So that's dauntless.com. You can find that. And also on my Twitter, at Dicker Tweets, I talk about the book all the time. I'm trying to build some buzz around it. And I want to get it into as many people's hands as possible. I think we have 60 physical copies left to sell. And then,
Wow, that's great.
No more physical copies. So I want to make sure that everybody can get a hold of the book if they want it.
Hmm. Physical copies are like the original NFTs.
Alex, you got to research this week.
I did.
And we're also doing a promo contest for the book. So far in the first 7 chapters, I think I've hidden 32 clues.
Ooh,
wow. In the first issue, I think there's 20.
That's a lot of clues.
If anybody can solve what's going on before the end of the book, the first person who solves it gets the first page of the comic sent to them for the original art.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that.
That's cool. That's very
cool. Yeah, I love having originals. I want like to reward my fans, especially the ones that go back and reread and like start picking through the backgrounds, trying to find all these clues that I've hidden throughout. Second place gets a commission from me, no matter like whatever you want, I'll draw it for you. And the third person gets a signed copy of the book sent to them.
Oh, I thought you were going to say third place gets fired, but all right.
I mean, that's you were going to say third place. Yeah, here's my commission. Actually, I should say, I just want you to take a nice long sleep. I want an excellent nap from you. But let me just shout out the book one more time, because like it's meticulously done, and I don't know if that's what a 60-hour work day is what you put in, and out comes these panel by panel like pieces. Like the each panel really has such intention to it, and I feel like that's, you don't always see that in comics, especially when people are like, I gotta race through this. So the time taken here is well spent. So I would shout out this book in a big way.
Yeah. Thank you. That means a lot to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Sean, thank you so much for coming on. Such a pleasure.
Congratulations, pleasure to chat.
Man. Good luck on the last lap here as you finish up the book.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Have a good one, man.
Yeah.
There you go. Sean Dicker, halfway through today's work day, getting ready for another 15 to 20 hours of it. So that's very exciting. But check out Uncovered Grave, available right now. And we...
I've been wanting to do an Uncovered Grave for when I die.
Just really?
Yeah, I think they'll leave me open to the world. I
want Uncovered Grave is like it's like the open-faced sandwich of funerals.
Exactly, and I want to shake it up. Everyone's like, yeah. put the top slice of bread on me, bury it down. I want people to come by, drop in a memento.
Yeah, great. I'll have a place. I'll put half a cheesesteak in there with you.
When you say drop in a memento, you mean a VHS copy of Memento.
The movie Memento, yes.
I just wanted to make sure. I don't want to bring the wrong thing. That would be so embarrassing. Yeah,
that would be embarrassing. If you dropped the wrong thing in my open grave, that would be sad.
All right. Here's something that's not sad. Our next guest, who has a Kickstarter running right now that's been super successful for, I'm going to mangle this, but Osama Tezuko's Unico, Samuel Satin, welcome to the stream.
Hey, hello.
How much of that did I get wrong? First of all, did I get your name? Is it Satin?
It's Satin, yeah. Satin.
Like okay, I got that part right.
Yes,
but the project is so cool. It is a reboot, a manga reboot. Speaking of manga, I don't know if you guys have been doing...
You insulted everyone.
20 pages a day. But you're doing a reboot of, is it Osamu Tezuka's... Unico?
I've heard it a lot of ways, but I learned when I was over at Tezuka Productions, it's Tezuka. That's what they like.
Tezuka.
So it's okay. Just like, okay, now I know for sure. But I've heard people, but a lot of people say Tezuka. So it's including in Japan.
You don't need to make me feel better, but thank you so much. but let's talk about this project. This is with one of my favorites. Kuri Haru is doing the art here. This is an amazing reboot. I'm watching the numbers tick up right now. Your goal for the Kickstarter was 50,000. You are almost at 100,000 right now as of this. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about this project. Tell us where it started. Actually, Justin, do you want to... You were telling us a story before we went live.
Very light story.
It was a light story.
Unico is we watched The Last Unicorn a lot growing up, and we were like, oh, let's show this to our kids. And we ended up finding Unico, and they became obsessed with Unico. So we like stumbled upon it just like on trying to find The Last Unicorn. And now it's something that we're like, let's watch the unicorn movie. And then now it's part of our lives.
That's really fascinating, actually, because, you know, honestly, like The Last Unicorn was actually done in part by a Japanese studio.
Yes.
So it's like, which is kind of like one of those things that they're trying to, I think some folks are trying to do a resurgence of it right now to a gallery or something like that. But yeah, it was done by a Japanese studio, and Unico and The Last Unicorn have way more in common than, say, Unico and My Little Pony or something like that.
Yeah, you know, right.
Those two stories are far more similar in what they're trying to get across.
Well, and like rewatching it as an adult, I was like, oh, this is all bright and fun and incredibly scary and dark at the same time.
the word that we keep on getting from everybody that we talk to, that everybody has seen, because most people know Unico from the films that came out, the two films that came out in the 80s. And the word that we get most often is traumatizing. but they also like loved them. It's like one of those things, like, you know, when I was growing up, for me it was I saw Unico, then I saw, you know, Last Unicorn, Never Ending Story, things like this that were just incredible, but also, you know, messed with you. So
it is funny, this is very off that, but I think about this a lot now having kids, where everybody is trying to recapture that feeling of like exactly what you're talking about, like Never Ending Story. And I remember seeing that and sobbing when the wolf came out and everything, and everybody's like, oh, we got to do that again, we really got to traumatize kids and do this stuff. And having kids, I'm like, I don't know, maybe we don't. They, we don't need to do that. What do you think?
We need to. We
the part where he's like, these look like strong hands, still breaks me to the
day. They're great movies. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, when Artax dies in the swamps of sadness, when the horse dies.
That's the real moment.
That's the one. Oh, and it's God. Like, it's one of those questions that I think that I wonder, like, if films like that were to come out today, would they be considered exclusively children's films?
Well, the one, this is, again, getting far afield, and then I want to get back to your book. Sorry. I talked about this on the show before, but I took my kids to see Shazam because everybody was like, oh, it's a great family movie. It's like these 80s movies that we used to go see. And me not thinking in my head, like, that means trauma. And there's a scene in Shazam, if you haven't seen the movie, where they're in the boardroom, the seven deadly sins come out, and they're kind of like the devil dogs from Ghostbusters. And they just go in, and they're, like, legitimately ripping people's heads off and spitting them out. Out and people are jumping out of windows and screaming, and my kids had never seen anything like this and just started literally screaming and sobbing, and the theaters are like, we need to go, why did you do this to us? They bring it up once a week. They're like, hey, remember when you took us to see Shazam? And my son now, who's seven, has gotten super into the Marvel movies and keeps asking about the DC movies, and whenever he asks about the DC movies, he's like, but I shouldn't see those, right? Those are really scary.
There's like, a darkness there, Father.
Yeah. I'm like, no, man, let's watch Batman v Superman. It's my favorite movie. Oh, let's go. Oh,
just a bright, don't fun movie like Batman.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
Why don't we talk about Utico? Because the project is great. Where did it initially start taking the idea to take these movies, take this anime style and turn it into a manga?
So the first, Unico, for those who might not know, Unico actually started out as a manga. It was actually serialized from 1974 to 1976. And it's in the films kind of borrow from the arcs in that manga and they take it forward. It was created in conjunction with Sanrio, actually, when it first came out. And Tezuka was considered to be the god of manga in Japan, like kind of the one who created. People mostly know him here in the U.S. for Astro Boy, right? But it's, you know, he's also the depth of the span of his work is incredibly large, right, in terms of what he's done. So Unico was one of these characters that he created in conjunction with Sanrio, and it kind of took on its life of its own. And because it was a Tezuka story, it does include a lot of themes of trauma and you know, difficulty, and the idea of like the duality of love and beauty and all these different things that are really complex for young readers. So a lot of people, especially in Japan, grew up reading that book and kind of internalized that, and then I came over to the United States via the films mostly, which were pretty big here. And so like I had seen the films when I was younger. But I became hugely obsessed with Tezuka's work over a decade ago. And I set out to read whatever I could. And when I went to the Tezuka Museum in Takarazuka, which is around Tokyo, I saw more stuff about Unico, and I kind of started to learn more about the character. And I started reading more of the original stories, which were interesting because they were full color, which is kind of unusual for a manga. Yeah. That's why we're actually doing this in color, because the original was actually read left to right in Japan and was a color book. And so it's like, you know, it's really beautiful. If you ever get a chance to look at it, it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. Actually, well, I know this is a podcast, but I have it near me, but if anyone wants to
show, I want to see it.
I say put it up there for my own selfish end.
Awesome.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Yeah.
So it's like, it's really stuff to show off. It's like really, you know, beautiful, full color art.
That is beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like really, it's kind of unusual. Ooh, look at that panel. Right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And so, And so anyway, so seeing this, and like, I ended up working, long story short,
Oh no, that was a short story.
Shortest story I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Oh, did I cut out?
Yeah, you said long story short and then completely froze. And we're like,
no, I'm so sorry.
Very short.
Am I back?
Yeah, you're back.
You're good.
So long story short, my friend Deb Aoki, who's she's a writer. She writes about manga a lot. She also does the podcast Manga Splaining. She introduced me to some people who a guy named Vince Sortino, who knows people over at Tezuka, and they asked about, you know, they were, I learned they were accepting pitches for their character adaptations. So I sent them a pitch for Unico, and somehow they accepted it.
Wow, that's so exciting.
And yeah, and from there we went into the process of getting the license, and then working to get an artist on board, working with different people for that. And this might be in your future, another question you might ask, but Gudahidu actually turned it down the first time.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah.
Why is that?
For a few reasons. Like, one reason is because it's a big responsibility to do a Tezuka comic in a Tezuka adaptation in Japan. Because if you think about it, it's kind of like people call, some people in the United States, they say like he's the Walt Disney of Japan. Mm-hmm. Kind of like, I don't think it's that one-to-one. It's almost like he's Walt Disney and Jack Kirby and a couple of other, like, you know,
right,
people put together, because he did all sorts of things. And it's just like, it's not, he started anime, he started manga, modern manga. He started, you know, he did a lot of stuff, right?
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, just jumping between different mediums feels like it's these different people. Like, it's someone who could sort of do it all.
Yeah, absolutely. He could do it all. And his stories were both for adults and for kids and for all over the, like, you know, all over the middle. So they were a little intimidated by the idea of, like, taking on the project. And also, they didn't know if they were going to be able to put their style on it, because they wanted to make sure that, you know, they could do it and have creative freedom. But thankfully, working with Tezuka Productions has been really great, and they encourage everybody to have creative freedom and really,
That's awesome.
Push things forward, and that's what they like to do, which is so cool. So they gave us like the ability to really explore what we wanted to explore with the character.
That's awesome. And so, how will you be traumatizing us with the book now?
Yeah, exactly.
The thing is, again, I think it's we were both talking about this. It's actually really funny because you had a really cool, Sean Dicker was the artist's name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The comic's really great. And like a horror comic, and both Gudahidu and I didn't know this until recently, are big horror. I knew about myself, but not about Gudahidu. They're big horror fans. Oh. We both really like horror. And actually, and what you would not be able to tell from looking at Gudahidu's art, it's really funny.
Pretty bright. Yeah,
pretty bright and pretty joyous, and like, but you know, they're a big horror enthusiast, and so the thing is that, and some people have described Unico as horror for kids in some sort of way, like, and so because it's not, I mean, it is a bright tale, but it also has moments of exceptional darkness. It's about for those who don't know, it's about a small unicorn who angers the gods. Because of his ability to spread kindness and love. And because of that, the goddess Venus, who's the goddess of, you know, love and beauty, basically wants to have him destroyed, wants to have him obliterated. So she has her servant carry him through time and space and make him forget everything he is. And then he ends up, and then servant, the West Wind, Venus's servant, ends up taking pity on him. And saying, I'm going to hide you from the gods and let you kind of live out. But the only way to do that is whenever you spread your power of love, you're going to attract the gods. So I have to erase your memory again and take you to another place. So it's basically this kind of like constant, it's a sad story in a way.
Constant punishment and super innocent as well, where it's just like, you're like, oh, and then it's just kind of bad things keep happening.
It's a very sad, it's a sad story, right? And so, and the cool thing is though that we, for this version, Tezuka Productions, well, can't share, I'm not sure how much I can share about that, but we're allowed to explore the larger universe of Unico and maybe beyond, because the story actually Tezuka never ended the story.
Yeah.
Ooh. And so, and that would be neat to end the story. So,
Well, tell us a little bit about the Kickstarter. What can people expect if they head over there?
I think they can expect some awesome stuff. Just great stuff. It's a great Kickstarter. Basically, one of the great things that we have is because starting this Kickstarter, we ended up getting, it ended up kind of being very celebratory, because a lot of artists, especially artists in Japan, had really, you know, fond and lasting memories of Unico from when they were kids. So we were able to talk to artists like Komomi Shirahama, who does Witch Hat Atelier. And she agreed to do a piece of the project. We have Akira Himekawa, who does Legend of Zelda manga. And then we have Peach Momoko, which you're going through right now. And yeah, Peach did three prints for the campaign.
So cool.
Which is just so cool. And they're so beautiful. And I mean, I'm sure you guys like know about, and like, I mean, are you all Peach Momoko fans?
Yeah, we've been talking about the Demon Days thing in particular, which is from Marvel, if anybody hasn't been checking that out, which is so cool.
Yeah, it's incredible. And so she did these three incredible prints for Unico. And like, and as she said, I think, and she even gave a quote about it for how it kind of impacted her when she was young. And then we had some American artists as well that were participated in doing prints. And then we also have these, to even expand a little more, we have these print items that we're calling artifacts. And they're kind of like little mini comics, books, little things like that, little cool print objects. We have pins. And the print objects are all by American cartoonists, which is pretty cool. So we ended up just bringing a lot of different people who really want to celebrate the character and Tezugar to be able to work on this campaign. And it gave us a really nice kind of array of things to choose from. So it's been really cool. And we just love seeing it coming together. It's just been amazing.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a lot of different Kickstarters, and to see all the kind of artists jumping in really lets you know how special of a project this is, and all the different kind of different tiers and stuff. It's pretty amazing what's available for people.
Thank you. Yeah, it's basically, it was actually really, this is my first Kickstarter, right? Mm-hmm. I've never run a Kickstarter before, so it's been kind of terrifying, right? you know, at least for me. But it's like it's been incredible, because every time we go to somebody and be like, hey, like, excuse me, famous person, would you be interested in possibly drawing a print of Unico or doing something for Unico? And they're like, absolutely. Oh my God, I would love to. That's incredible. And so there's no like, please, would you? I mean, it's really, yes, I would love to do this. And that's why it's really just been like, I can just, people have been asking like, how was organizing it? How did that part come together? And I'm like, it was just really nice to see how enthusiastic everybody was. There was no like, there was not one person who was just like, oh, I guess so. Like, you know? and with Peach, for example, Peach Momoko, she ended up just asking if she could do three. Wow. So we were like, we asked her for one, and she's like,
sure. I guess if you want to, that's fine.
Yes, we were like, okay.
So, yeah, we just want one, so you could take the other two and throw them away, I guess.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
We got a question here on YouTube. Yeah. What other classic manga creators' work would you be into revisiting?
Me personally?
Yeah, you personally. We don't do that. That's not a thing we're doing.
Sorry,
barely do this.
That's a great question. I mean, wow. What other? I mean, I'm a big my whole entire thing is I really love Tezuka. Like, I genuinely love his work. I mean,
went to the museum before this was even happening. So that track.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No. He's been kind of an inspiration for me for a really long time. And I think that I personally think that some of his books, you can read some of his books and see every single trick in comics on display. You can see across anything you can find in a Tezuka. It's really cool. Like, he believed that comics were an international language. And that's why he also believed in collaboration and the idea that it was really great to iterate upon people's stories from different countries and different places and to have his own stories iterated upon. So that's kind of why I wanted to work on Tezuka's work in particular. So it's a great question, but I haven't really thought about if there's anybody else on the outside of this, because there's kind of reasons around why I feel possible to work on this.
If somebody was listening to this podcast and they hadn't read any Tezuka, as an expert, where would you start? Like, what volume would you potentially point them to?
for Unico or for
just in general? If somebody, because here's the thing,
Unico and then
Unico,
there are only the two volumes, so there are two volumes that are published in Japanese. I believe Digital Manga Publishing puts out a digital version of in English, but we're hoping one of the things we can do from this Kickstarter is get renewed interest in a republication effort for the new for Unico in English.
Cool.
That'd be really great. But for other Tezuka stuff, I think that so if you're looking for something younger, you know, something a little bit more or something a little bit more accessible in that that's not as, you know, I suppose crunchy is the best word, like I would try Dororo. Which is was made into an anime, recently adapted to an anime, possibly you could always go with Astro Boy or something like that. Yeah, I mean, Blackjack is the most famous book of his in Japan, but for some, and it's great, but for some reason Americans have some trouble with it. I don't know what that is. Mm-hmm. Like they like it in Europe, they don't like it here. So that's weird. It's really hard for bookstores to be able to actually sell copies of. Mm-hmm. Blackjack. It's really interesting, but it's the surgeon who's the kind of superhero surgeon is what he is. But I mean, if you're interested in really like getting on board with what, you know, Japan considers to be the most important, the most popular kinds of good work, Blackjack's a really good one. To start with, my favorite is MW. That's a much darker book.
Not that you shouldn't read all of that, but if somebody was just interested in Unico, the new version, could they jump right into that? Or do you prefer that people check out the previous version before they check out your version?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, either way, but I think at the same time, like, it's kind of like when people read Pluto, right? Mm-hmm. By Naoki Urasawa. Like, you know, I think there were a lot of people who probably read Pluto who hadn't ever read Astro Boy before.
Right.
You know, so, but you know, right? Did you? Yeah. And then maybe you go back and can kind of get something from reading mm-hmm. the original. I think, you know, for me, I'm like, whatever gets you into the idea of Tezuka's work, or just, you know, that's awesome. So whatever you want to read, but yeah.
Cool. Growing up, I lived near the Canadian border in upstate New York, and we Astro Boy was on the Canadian stations we would get. And we would watch that and be like, what is this? What is happening here? So Astro Boy was one of the first cartoons I ever like really watched and took in.
That's wild. And you watched it with the Canadian translation, right?
Yeah, and that's very confusing. A lot more like sort of Moose and Tim Hortons.
Yeah. A lot of posters.
Yeah. A lot more Flapjack talk.
Exactly. That's speaking my language.
Sam, thank you so much for coming on. Yeah, good luck with the Kickstarter, though. It doesn't seem like you did. You're scratching
amazing.
On $100 right now.
I'm so sorry. I want to say that one thing that was interesting about the manga conversation that was going on earlier with the manga schedule. First of all, it's true. People do overwork themselves to death sometimes. It's not good. But second of all, some of them also have full teams.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, it feels later. Like there's another person working for them.
Often when they're serialized, they don't look as the comics look different when they're serialized and they get cleaned up later on because they're going so fast. So it's like, there's different versions of, anyway, it's a different kind of.
Well, thanks for putting that out.
Thanks
there.
Thanks for the follow-up. That's
that's good. Great clarification. I love it. Yeah. Awesome. Again, Sam, thank you so much for coming
on.
Good luck with the project. Lovely chatting with you.
Congratulations.
Great talking to you, man. Good luck.
Thanks, guys. Take it easy.
All right, there we go. Once again, Satin, and the book is Unico, which you can check out on Kickstarter right now.
The Podcasting University, a podcast where we show you how to get started with your own podcast and make money from it through simple step-by-step tips, advices, and instructions. Listen into successful podcasters as they talk about their journey, the difficulties that they faced, and how they made it to where they are today. You can visit thepodcastinguniversity.com for more details.
Leadership, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starfleet Leadership Academy, its ongoing mission to develop leaders through Star Trek. to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. A leadership development podcast told through the lens of Star Trek, the Starfleet Leadership Academy, available everywhere you listen to podcasts.
And we are going to move to our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It's your audience questions.
Audience question.
We have so many questions for you, the audience. That's how this works. We ask
probably
questions
a lot about your glasses and stuff, right?
Yeah. Probably a lot about my glasses. If you want to ask a question, though, you all are already doing this. Drop an ask a question here on Crowdcast or in the comments over on YouTube. And in the meantime, while we're waiting for that, what are y'all drinking? Pete, what are you drinking tonight? What's going on?
Well, it just from looking at the glasses, it seems like you get the anti-glare, which I think is important. Is that something that you get, like a special tint or stuff that you get in your glasses?
What are you doing? Did you have like a commission from the optometrist or something? What's going on?
Let me say, I think Pete has a lot of glare in his glasses. So I think he's trying to get a real...
This is something that came with the...
This is a Specflex situation.
I'll be honest. This is something that came with the glasses, okay? What I do is you pay a little extra and you turn the brightness down on your fucking monitor, Pete.
Wow. Great roast. We're getting hugely roasted right now here, I think.
Huge roast.
So you don't get
eyeballs have a lot of glare, so don't talk about it, Josh.
No, that's my soul in there.
Okay.
It's flickering out. It's flickering
out. Justin, what are you drinking? Are you drinking something else now? Seems like.
I'm drinking a Negroni. I have three bottles of liquor right next to my laptop.
Woo! That's dangerous. That's dangerous.
You're goddamn right it is, but I'm courting danger. I'm courting danger.
Pete, what about you? What are you drinking this evening?
Oh, dude, you know, I'm drinking a little vodka, a little peach pear, and just a splash of Gatorade. You know what I mean? Just a little bit.
Nice.
Now, what made you want to splash the Gatorade? Were you sort of think, oh, I need a little sort of electrolyte sousance here, or what happened?
Yeah. You know, I was feeling a little tired, and I wanted a little something extra in there. You know what I mean? Well,
Gatorade, famously good at keeping people up.
Yep.
Great. Enjoy your salty juice. Let's go to some questions here. This is from Jolene. With Moon Knight ended, it got me thinking about portrayals of DID in comic adaptations from Moon Knight to Mary Walker, Crazy Jane, and even the Hulk. What do you think about each interpretation? What worked and didn't work for you? First of all, this is Legion Erasure, but let's go ahead from there.
Wow. Nice.
Legion. Legion was a great show.
I mean, I don't think we're psychologists, so we're not necessarily qualified to weigh in or talk about this, but just in general, just to sort of set the tone, I'll say that I do think creators, both from a TV and comic book perspective, have, for the most part, gotten smarter about it and more respectful about it. Back in the day, back when, you know, we used to call it schizophrenia, among other things, I think people would throw it out as like, well, isn't this crazy? People have multiple personalities. That's nuts. And use words like that. And now they understand that, no, this is a legitimate thing that doesn't exactly work that way. Let's treat it more reasonably. Justin, you were going to say something about it, though.
I mean, I was going to sort of say what you're saying, where it's like back in the day, there wasn't a lot of you didn't have to be quite as faithful to reality when you were dealing with that. It was almost like, what if they had schizophrenia in quotes, and that is the whole thing, and it was not great. So I do think there is a little bit more exploration there in an interesting way, and in taking these characters that were perhaps hastily constructed with that multiple personality situation or disorder, however you want to refer to it, in depending on the character, and then now it's becoming a little bit more of a way of looking back and fixing a little bit of what came before.
Pete, were you going to say something there?
No.
Great. The other thing, not to go too far afield, but I'll throw it out there as well, just because I don't think on our podcast or anybody who's listening or commenting on our podcast, but there's always a lot of very stupid discussion online about like, God, I want woke politics out of my media or whatever. But frankly, I think like we're saying here, things like more intelligence about DID lead to better and more interesting storytelling. Like rather than just having somebody who's like, well, it's two Moon Knights. the end, you can actually delve into it. And whether it's successful or not, that's obviously a different thing. But there's more of an opportunity to create more drama there, to create more introspection, to do exactly. something that's more intelligent and interesting. And I love that.
To me, it doesn't have anything to do with like a political or like wokeness thing. It's more like, hey, I want to tell a better story with this, so I have to understand what the details are of it. It's like right, being exactly. like writing a story about dinosaurs and just being like, look at all those teeth. It's like, no, let's figure out what was going on there a little bit so we can tell a story that makes sense and has some resonance to it.
And I mean, although, I know you opened this up by saying we're not psychologists, but at the same note, a lot of psychologists work under the dinosaur theory. Like, first thing they do yeah. is like, what dinosaur are you? Decide your teeth, then decide the rest of your body.
And quick, let's shout out each of us what dinosaur we are.
Oh, man. Wait, each other or ourselves?
No, ourselves. Well, I would never want to put a dino
pizza
on.
Triceratops, but go off, man. Go off, king.
Oh, wow.
I was gonna say Stegosaurus for Pete, but Pete,
oh, really? Okay. That's fair,
huh?
That's fair.
Huh.
You say Pete.
I was gonna go with pterodactyl, but you know, I appreciate what you're doing. You know,
the
you
screaming know. Bird of the dinosaur world. Attracts right. Alex.
Oh gosh, Diplodocus. Is that a thing?
I believe it's Diplocatus, but
Diplocatus.
But yes.
What are you, Raptor? Justin?
Nah, Ankylosaurus, man. I'm a fucking tank, kid. I'm coming in, wrecking shit with my
I'm sorry,
big bone
tail. Ankylosaurus?
Ankylosaurus. Look it up. You check your dinos, dude. An Ichthyosaurus, the dolphin dino with shark teeth. That's a
yeah, check
dino.
Your dinos, dude.
Check your dinos, dude.
Bro.
Yep. Went to the dinocologist the other day for an appointment.
Nice. Shout out to Kevin in the comments. It's to Kevin in the comments, who is only bringing us Dinosaurs the Television Show answers. Pete is Earl Sinclair. Alex is not the mama, baby Sinclair.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and Justin is Fran Sinclair. So, Pete, Justin, you're married. Straight Bullet asks,
true, we are.
You guys have had a lot of awesome guests. Is there a guest you would really like to have but haven't been able to get? Ooh, good question.
Well, it'd be nice to talk to Greg Pak again.
Can't get him.
We've talked to him a lot.
I know.
Think the question is looking deeper into someone that we haven't really spoken to yet.
Gosh, I don't know. I feel like, I mean, I'll throw out Jeff Lemire as one that we've put out a couple of times, but we're having him on the live show coming up in just a couple of weeks. So
yeah,
that worked out.
That's a
Jordan
nice one.
D. White gets a shout out from Straight
Jordan
Bullies.
D. White is missed.
It would be nice to catch up with him, see how he's
yes.
doing. See Jordan when he's going to move on from X-Men and do something.
Yeah, Kevin says William Marston. That's been very hard. We've dug up his grave several times, but he hasn't had a lot to say, to be frank. He's a little tied up at the moment.
Nice. I've been wanting to have the actual Cyclops on, not just the actual character on.
Mythological like. Cyclops?
No, not the...
Oh, okay.
That seems less fun. The X-Men.
I'd love to hear the mythological Cyclops and what he thinks about Cyclops the X-Men.
Yeah, he'd be like, why he take my thing?
There we go. I think we answered that question. This is also from Stray Bullet. I don't know if you guys have checked this out. This just dropped right before the show went live. After seeing the She-Hulk trailer, in another rare moment of agreement, Jolene and I both noticed the CGI doesn't look great. I watched the Avatar trailer, and honestly, it's like watching an animated movie. Where is the line when it comes to practical special effects versus CGI?
Great question. I mean, I think the world is moving toward more CGI. Because most people, I think, most audience members, especially younger audience members, don't seem to be bothered by it. Avatar, the whole thing is like, look, we made this all up. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, we invented cameras for this movie. You know?
And I think that's very cool from a technological perspective, but I do think that the storytelling in Avatar is pretty basic at the end of the day. So, like, I'd maybe put a little more effort over there. And I've been sort of talking down Avatar in general. No disrespect, but I just have never really gotten into that.
James Cameron listening to our podcast right now, sobbing his guts out.
Yeah. Well, he's probably under a lot of pressure. He has to write Avatar 9. The script is due to himself next week.
Interior desert now.
Yeah.
They're scared. Blue people desert. Very hot.
Yeah, it's good. Look at all those adjectives he's using. But I also think, like, I was talking about this today, the Book of Boba Fett as a series, like, had its own problems. No offense, team. Keep it cool.
Watch your fucking self.
But that was literally, like, a top-tier Star Wars big-budget project that was poorly made. It was something where you, just from a production perspective and a camera perspective, it was like, what? Why does this look so bad? This should look better. They had all opportunity, seemingly. So I do think it's easy to make mistakes with CGI or like, we didn't cover that correctly for the effects we're trying to put in. We have to now rotoscope all of this stuff out. That's time consuming and more money and problem, and it's not going to look good anyway. So I think there will be a return to more practical effects in larger projects as people start to come back to that as like a way of making something look cool without having to put as much time, effort, and mistake-driven things into their final product.
Well, I'll throw two things out at you. The first one is apropos of what you're saying. There was a big article that came out in Vanity Fair today about the future of Star Wars on TV. Jon Favreau was talking about the volume, which is the light wall that they developed for the Mandalorian, and also for the Happy Hogan scenes, of course, Pete.
Yeah.
You love those. Those are all CGI. Happy Hogan is a CGI character now, which is kind of incredible. Most people don't know this. But anyway, Jon Favreau was talking about the volume, and he was saying they developed this for The Mandalorian, and for people who don't know, this is the next evolution of green screen walls, so that they can create these digital sets. They can create these backgrounds. And what you're saying, Justin, which I think is absolutely correct, one of the issues visually with Book of Boba Fett is you could see the seams, the way that they filmed it. Like, you could see the bottom of the volume.
Yeah,
and part of that might have been the speed they were going, might have been the directors not knowing how to deal with it. I don't know what it was, but it was very strange versus The Mandalorian, where clearly they have the extra time to actually make that stuff work most of the time. I would also throw out Star Trek Discovery is another show that's been using the volume and doing a very bad job of it, where it's just like, oh, you're on a set. I just don't like looking at this. So part of the thing is the time. The amount of time before release that they can do it. But the other thing that I was going to mention, another series to throw out at you that uses a lot of CGI that I've been thinking about way too much and talking about way too much, is Halo on Paramount Plus. And well, the reason I was going to throw this out, I was specifically thinking about this today, is they're all CGI scenes look pretty bad when they have all of the Spartans in their full armor fighting aliens. And watching that, it's like watching somebody play a video game, which maybe is purposeful, but I don't think so. But the whole idea of doing a live action version of Halo is not to be watching a video game. So when you can get to a place like that, where you are using the special effects, again, like on something like The Mandalorian, where they put the time and the effort in to the extra effort and to really, really make it work most of the time, I do think it's worth it, and it's a tool. And the thing that Jon Favreau was saying in this article is it takes half the time for them to do these episodes.
So, and I appreciate that. There. But I think the aesthetic of Mandalorian, and we're getting way too deep in here, is about like solo character in front of a wide, LED screen, huge vista, like the old Western type thing. So there's a lineup there with the way they're making it and what they're actually making. When something like Book of Boba Fett was not that. There were characters running around all the time. They were on like fast speeder bikes, but like it just didn't work because of what they were trying to do was different. And you had a director like Robert Rodriguez, who I don't know all of his experience. I know Spy Kids was a ton of CGI, but it feels like this was something that they didn't have their hands fully around when they were making that series. So I just prefer, I think practical effects, if you understand it and you can really use it effectively and have the time and money to put into it, it makes for a better show because it's real. And you can do it there and figure it out there rather than be like, I think we got it. Let's wait and see what happens.
Yeah, I just think it's one of those things where I saw the trailer and there are parts where she looked great.
Talking about She-Hulk now.
She-Hulk, yeah. That's why I said she. It was one of those things where...
Whenever you use the pronoun she, you're always referring to She-Hulk. Go ahead.
There is some truth to that.
No, but when we're talking about She-Hulk and I say she...
We have not been talking about She-Hulk for the past 10 minutes. Go ahead.
God, this is fun. This
so
is
Alex fun. Having conversation.
I was specifying for the listening audience. Yeah.
Well, okay, great. Also, if you have a Paramount Plus shirt, you don't have to then bring up Paramount Plus.
All I'm saying is Paramount Plus is one of the cheapest services and the most bang for your buck. You can get all of the new South Park movies on demand, as well as Evil, one of the hottest shows on TV, and the entire slate of Star Trek shows. Go ahead, Pete.
That's not what this is for.
Yeah, I can't wait for the offer. Anyways, I just think that...
Oh, it's bad. It's bad. And also, it's odd, and they've done like six episodes.
Anyways, I just think that it's hard because in the script, it's like, okay, a shot of her, but they don't know what it's going to look like until the end. So, you know, depending on how much money they have in the budget for certain shots, it can look... I mean, there were parts in Loki, which everybody thought was great, where it looked like... It, you know, there was like, oh, there's a couple shots in there that was just that can pull you out. So it's hard, and it's a mostly in post production. So, you know, you really got to be on the budget and making sure that you got time for those kinds of things, especially because the whole character really depends on it.
And I also think with a trailer, they might not be finished with a special effects. Mm-hmm. A lot of time, the trailer will come out and it's just like, oh, that will look better in the show. It's just this.
Let's hope. This in particular was something that they clearly rushed out. So just very briefly, right now is Upfronts Week when the networks present their upcoming schedule. They try to sell stuff to advertisers. As far as I can tell, I was not attending the Disney upfront, but it seems like they did not have much other than Kevin Feige coming out and presenting Marvel stuff, to be honest. Like, everybody was expecting them to present their Disney Plus ad-supported tier here. As far as I know, before the show, at least, they did not do that, which is a huge miss. So they almost definitely rushed out the She-Hulk trailer in order to be like, here's our new big thing. This is coming up. Also, here's Samuel Jackson to talk about Secret Invasion. No footage to show you. Enjoy.
It is crazy. We talk
Jot's
about...
Jot's fired themselves.
Well, but like I think it's true about the way these deadlines work. I feel like we're talking deep industry stuff right now, but... We talk about how slick, how these big properties, how much money goes into it. But a lot of times it comes down to, hey, we need something right now. Hurry. What do you have? We have to show something. We have to give them a little snack. We have to give them a snack. What do we got? And it's like, oh, here's a bad version of something that we wanted to be great, but we're out of time. And here you go.
Yeah, crazy. I mean, the timing is tough because it's like, you know, also like you get somebody excited for a show, but then by the time the post-production comes around and it finally gets put out, who knows that heat's still on. It's like your show, I'm so excited to see it now, but by the time it finally comes out, who knows?
You
know
what I mean? How
like,
dare
it's
you,
already
No, no, no. I want to back up Pete here. Your show, the CGI was unfinished. It looked like it was Adam Pally and John Gabris in there. That cannot be the final version.
No. I'll be playing both of those roles in the final.
Okay. All right.
Don't worry. Pete, you're talking a lot about post. Are you getting into post production? Are you trying to?
Well, I'm trying to step up. You know, I've been, a line producer for a long time, and you know,
trying to eat my lunch.
I do love this. Lunch. Normally, Pete's like, I don't. You're legitimately. You've worked on production. You've worked on sets, and you pretend
you
like
worked
you
on
don't.
Production more than both of us for
absolutely
for years.
And you pretend you're like, I don't know what's going on. This is the first time I've heard you talk about any production thing in like a decade. It's wild. Speaking of which, this ties nicely into a question we got here over on YouTube. Stanley asks, you guys seem to be great friends, but have you ever not gotten along and needed to take a break? Pete, that's a question.
Yeah. That's a big question for Pete. Well, I think Justin,
you can go first. You can go first.
Well, let me say, we've never really taken a break. Once we started doing this, it's been like if this is a roller coaster, it's a long way to the bottom. And we are on that ride.
Or the top.
You think we're going like this? I think we're on a big, we're just racing down. We're just like doing stuff all the time. My arms are up and the wind's in my hair. But let me say, we haven't seen each other all together in what, almost 3 years? Two and a half years?
Yeah.
And this very weekend, we are going to all be together for at least 1 hour.
Yeah. No podcast.
No, I don't know. We'll see what happens. People,
we got to turn a mic on. We just got to hear us all in the
exactly.
Same room.
Exactly. But yes, that's going to be very nice. Very excited to see you guys in person. And then we'll take an extended break. What's up? Oh, you're going to ask me about my glasses?
I'm just going to still ask you questions about your glasses. I'm gonna
great use
Marnie
of our friendship and time for you to come and only ask you questions.
But to answer it honestly, though, yeah, I mean, there are times where we have fought. There are times where, you know, people get busy and, you know, need some time off or whatever, but we try to be accommodating. The real thing that keeps us going is we have a ton of fun doing this. We're all very passionate about comics and comedy, so it is something that you know, makes it all worth it at the end of the day.
Oh, lovely answer. That's very nice. This is from Nelson Martinez, also over on YouTube. Sorry if you guys covered it. We didn't, I'll say in advance, but how'd you like the Boys season 3 trailer? I can't wait. Love the show. Did you guys check out the new season 3 trailer for The Boys?
I love The Boys. I think this show levels up so hard each season. And based on what they're putting out there, I feel like we're going to get that again.
It's going to be bananas. Yeah, I've seen a trailer. I don't know if it's the new. I don't know how new we're talking, but man, it...
Yesterday. It came out yesterday.
Okay, yeah, I've seen it. Yeah, I just think it's I'm very
did
excited.
Did you think another trailer came out yesterday?
Come on, Mr. Production. She-Hulk. Come on, post-production. Let's do this.
The She-Hulk thing literally dropped like 10 minutes ago. So, I'm very excited for it, and it looks crazier than even the comics got into. So, I'm very, very excited for it.
Yeah, I'm excited too. And I think part of the reason that I'm excited, which we've talked a lot about on Let's Hear It for the Boys, our The Boys podcast, is how shockingly on point it was with politics in the second season, which at least partially is luck on their part. But I'm very curious to see how much that lines up with the third season here. Obviously, there's a lot of fraught political situations in the country. So if it is on point again and still makes it work as rollicking good entertainment, that's going to be super, super impressive.
Well, let me throw out on that point. It is lucky to sort of choose what you want to do for your show, make it, and then have that be what's actually in the news when it comes out. Bad luck for society, maybe. But I also want to say, I think the creative team behind The Boys is also very prescient. They're very like, it's a swing. Because if you're going to talk about like race, white supremacy, like they did in the second season of The Boys, and then that's a big thing to do for a prestige superhero show on Amazon.
Yeah.
And they were like, this is what we want to do. This is what we want to cover. And then it just so happened that that's the one of the major issues we're grappling with in our society at the same time that show's coming out and beyond. So it feels like really smart of them, and it is, but it's also just risk-taking and really pushing it. And I worked on the after show for The Boys that aired on Amazon called Inside the Boys, and hearing them talk about it and really the care they take with their creative. They've been working on this season for over a year. Sorry, my daughter has some takes on race in America. They are aware of it and they're always working toward it.
Yeah. We got a question here in the comments. What happened to all the boys' hats? I think Justin's
you have them. I have them in my basement.
No, excellent. That basement is scary.
All right, we got one last question here. This is from Kevin. What are other movies from your childhood you like to see remade in comic or other form?
Well, I mean, the Last Unicorn was so absolutely just kind of like traumatizing and magical that that's something that just comes to mind just because we were talking about it. But man, I'm trying to think of like...
I'll throw out, this is a little bit of a cheat, but Gremlins is one of my absolute favorite movies from when I was a kid. Absolutely terrified me 100% completely. But there's a new animated series called Gremlins Secrets of the Mogwai that they've been working on forever. That's coming out eventually on HBO Max. They finally teased the cast the other day and it sounds great. James Hong is in it, Ming-Na Wen, a couple of other folks. So I don't know. I'm very excited about that just because I think like it's not going to go in the Gremlins 2 direction of making fun of Gremlins. It's going to go more into the like dark humor vein of the first movie. So I think that should be a lot of fun. Very excited to see that.
I'm going to throw out some random, these are more TV or cartoon animated series. Starcom, did you guys ever watch this? I'd love to see that brought to the comic book form. This was a show that aired on, like, I believe the Family Channel in the mid-90s. It aired on Sunday mornings, and it was like this cool space show. Silverhawks, another one.
Oh, Silverhawks, yeah. What about Mask? Was that Mask ever?
No.
I know that was based on the toy, but I don't know if it was ever a comic. I love the intro to that, Mask.
Love. And then
we know Captain Bucky O'Hare was a comic. We know that. And I don't know if Goonies. Oh, I think Goonies was a comic.
Goonies was a great, very easy to beat video game on the NES. I know that.
Super easy to beat. Goonies 2, you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm talking about Goonies 2.
Sequel that was truly impossible.
Nightmare game. Loved playing it. Never stopped playing
it. Could have been harder than Castlevania.
Oh, it's way harder than Castlevania. Goonies 2 was impossible.
Goonies 2 was... Castlevania, highly beatable game. Castlevania 3, one of the easiest games to beat that ever was made.
Yeah, what about Castlevania 2, though?
Castlevania 2 is one of my favorite games of all time.
What a horrible night to have a curse.
And that is it for your audience questions. We are going to move on with our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete the Page.
Oh, that's a horrible idea. But all right, let's do it.
It's a horrible night to have a curse.
This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience.
Ooh, we got a hand up right now from Mike T.
Mike T, bring Mike T up.
All right, there we go. Mike T competing for a $25 gift card. To Midtown Comics.
Mike T was the T. I have a cousin, Mike Tyler. Could be him.
Oh, is it?
Nope.
Hey,
Mike T.
Mike T in the place to be.
Sound working well?
Yeah, you're great.
Perfect.
Got some Funko Pops.
Thanks a lot, guys. It's cool. Yeah, I got tons of stuff back there. Trying to organize everything. Ooh, get my nerd space going good.
Yeah, it looks geek.
What's the Funko Pop game up back there? What's your collection?
Too many Dragon Ball Pops.
Yeah.
And then I got some turtles up there as well.
Nice.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pete's mustache twirled when he saw him, so I knew it was
All right, here we go. Today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend Mike Haggerty, R.I.P. All right, please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. Marvel Comics and blank are parting ways in July. Is it A, Ants in Your Pants, B, Conan the Barbarian, or is it C, Charles Dance? So it's either A or it's B, Conan the Barbarian.
I might go with Conan.
That is correct. That's
Conan?
Right.
Conan O'Brien.
Conan.
Here we go.
I want to read that comic book.
Ants in Your Pants, Charles Dance.
Whose creative team is returning for the Perry White solo title? Is it A, Barry White, B, Jimmy Olsen, or is it C, George Wendt? So it's either... you want to say B?
Could it be Barry White?
Nope.
Yeah, Barry White's involved. The estate is involved.
Okay, last one. Whose rogue gallery shows up for one bad day? Is it A, Batman, B, Peter Frampton, or C, Barbara Crampton? So it's either A or you're completely wrong. Yes, that's right.
Awesome.
$25 Woo! Is yours.
Congratulations. Thanks, guys. We're going to send you a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. Just shoot us an email at comicbookclublive@gmail.com. We got an answer here. Kevin says the third answers all point to Space Truckers. Is that correct, Pete?
The 1996 hit Space Truckers.
Incredible. Mike, congratulations. Enjoy your Funko Pops. You can use the gift card for another one if you want. Up to you.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks,
Mike. Pete, I thought it would be impossible, but it seems like trivia has gotten easier lately. Everything all right over there?
Yeah, I don't know, man.
If
too much puff in the fluff.
As we all know, new comics are great and we love them. Pete, yeah, what are you looking forward to that's coming out this week?
I'll tell you what I'm looking forward to is Duo number one, Fables number 151, and the Shaolin Cowboy number one.
Oh, wow. Pete really taking a lot of answers that he knows other members of this podcast would love to take.
What about you, Justin?
I want to shout out Fables 151, picking up literally right where the last series left off, which is super exciting. As it should, yes. I want to give it up for Bolero number 5 as well over from Image Comics. Really been enjoying that series about it's sort of a much more personal multiverse of madness.
And I just want to say Mike T said it wasn't easy. So, you know, he had to focus and he did a great job.
Oh, that's great. I am looking forward to I Hate This Place, number one from Image Comics. Man. Written by Kyle Starks, who is one of my favorites right now. That's one I'd love to have on the podcast. We'll make that happen. We'll make that work at some point.
That'd be cool.
That's my white whale now, even though I just mentioned it out loud for the first time. But
that
book is great.
Moby Dick.
Yes. He was like, whales, I guess, right? White whale. I'll go after that. That sounds good. Kyle Starks, all of his stuff has been great. So always looking forward to a new title from him. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Sean Dicker for coming on. Check out Uncovered Grave out, I believe, 20 pages a week. Is that what we said? Something like that?
Stop. I don't it, think that's
give
it.
The guy okay. All right. Give whatever it is. Also, Samuel Satin, Unico. Check that out on Kickstarter right now. So good. So fun. Next week, we're going to have a packed show. We're going to have two creative teams are going to be here. Christian Ward and Patrick Reynolds are going to be here to talk about Image Comics' Blood-Stained Teeth, which is a very cool vampire tale. Also, Ron Cacace and Vin Lavallo are going to be here to talk about Bite-Sized Archie. They're very fun mini-comics that are going out on Twitter.
Bite-Sized,
and also
Blood-Stained Teeth? It's a dentistry episode, guys.
There you go. We should have a dentist on Gunner Teeth Chat. What do you think? Couple of other things to plug on our end. The Doom Room, our Doom Patrol podcast, rolling out weekly on Thursdays, or you can get all 34 episodes right now by pledging our Patreon, Riverdale After Dark. Our Riverdale podcast comes out after the episodes air on Sundays. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, is on a hiatus between Moon Knight and Miss Marvel, but get ready for a new episode all about Guardians of the Galaxy coming out tomorrow.
Great rewatch.
So topical.
Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this show and all the shows we do. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Good night, folks. The song's over. Good night.